is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning and welcome to Guardian. Today is Wednesday, February 21st. And it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, it's a CA Nuri. Today is Wednesday. That means it's Man Down Mash Up Wednesday. That means that we are mashing two shows together to form one show where we analyze what is trending and what is inside the news. Of course, Erin Green is with me and she'll be analyzing the news with me and doing our analysis regarding that and also highlighting what is trending and what you and we are talking about, right? I want to read this before we start, right? It's 242 Day and 242 Day is February 24th, which is which day again?
Saturday.
This Saturday coming up. 242 Day is this Saturday coming up, and that means this happens every year. Every year on February 24th, which is the second month of the year. We want all Bahamians, all Bahamian businesses to show your Bahamian pride. Fly your Bahamian flags, wear your Bahamian flag colors, eat Bahamian food. Create and listen to Bahamian in sequences of 242. Do something 242 times or 2.42 times, etc. Merchants, please consider pricing items $2.42 or $24.20 or $242, etc. We're going to have fun. That means we are trending. We want a lot of people to take pictures and hashtag it all on the social media platforms. 242 Day. Of course, who has adopted this concept?
The Prime Minister.
The
Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
And who else has adopted it?
Published a proclamation in today's paper.
He did?
Yes.
I missed that.
Yep, in both papers.
Oh, both? Okay, go ahead.
The Independent Secretariat.
Okay, and I know they normally drop it.
On the schedule of events for the year.
I thought independence finish. It still goes. Okay, go ahead. Finish. Go ahead. Who else?
Everybody.
Yeah.
On the Clock is adopting it.
On the Clock is adopting it.
I'm trying to secure a pallet of juju tomorrow.
Tomorrow is not Friday. I assume you celebrate on Friday or you celebrate on Saturday.
I'm celebrating on Thursday, on Friday, and on Saturday.
242 Day.
We're celebrating on air. Mm-hmm. On Friday, we're talking local sports.
Okay.
Right? If Mr. Mark Palmer will forgive me, I want to play the How Bahamian Are You game show for 242 Day.
Okay.
242 Day edition.
Okay, good.
Right? Because 242 Day is another way to define the Bahamian experience.
Yes, and it's all right about defining the Bahamian experience. Right. So we want all Bahamiana, you know, I love using that word, Bahamiana, to celebrate.
In our conversation with Dr. Cleveland Aeneas III yesterday, a lot of the the texts and the commentary within suggested that people felt that the conversation excluded European descent or white people from the Christian or caressed experience, right? Many times the way that we talk about what it means to be Bahamian, non-African descent people or primarily European descent people or phenotypically white people.
I was going to say, I thought everyone here in the Bahamas was African descent.
Who identify as white.
I see you tiptoe. You didn't go there.
Feel left out.
Yeah. But they're any black too? They only have 1%.
The prevailing science says that everyone comes from a singular mother gene. And that mother gene is found on the continent we now call Africa. Right? So to some extent, we all trace the same lineage. That's the prevailing
common you took the safe route.
Science.
I see you took the safe route.
There are many people who
I agree with you,
would take offense. So 242 as a geographic descriptor is another way to define the Commonwealth of the Bahamas for purpose of celebration and commemoration.
Yes. And I'm glad we're still celebrating the 50th anniversary of us being independent and being Bahamian. And there's different aspects of being Bahamian, like quilting. I know the white Bahamians, Konki Joe Bahamians, still quilt. That's a Bahamian historic cultural expression that we tend to forget that we still do.
And because we, with European descent and phenotypically white Bahamians, we presume that it's a white experience, it's a European experience.
It's a Bahamian experience.
It's an authentically Bahamian experience, right? Mm-hmm. It's an integral part of who we are, and it cannot be dismissed.
Mm-hmm. And I want to also appreciate things like straw making. Long Island straw is different from Cat Island straw weaving, right? And we need to, which is different from Eleuther straw weaving too.
Right.
And we need to distinguish the differences and celebrate the differences.
Catalog them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And catalog the evolution of each style, mm-hmm. right? And then what happens when those practitioners come to New Providence, mm-hmm. right? And how internal migration has impacted these cultural elements. And we could do the same thing with coconut tart.
Yes.
You do the same thing with conch salad. You could do the same thing with peas and rice, right? The archipelagic experience, right, is unique, and it gives us an opportunity to celebrate ourselves. Can and don't.
And also we need to acknowledge that there are hyphenated Bahamians that should be able to be included in this. Like there's a Chinese Bahamian experience that we need to weave into Bahamiana. There's a Greek Bahamian experience that we need to weave into Bahamiana. There's a Haitian Bahamian experience mm-hmm. that we need to weave into Bahamiana because now...
Because they are a part.
Yes, they are a part of it.
They are a part of... It's not that we need to weave them in, mm-hmm. right? We need to identify how they are woven into this grand experience. And people will say, I don't want to talk about that. Well, then stop eating crack conch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just stop eating crack conch. It'll be okay.
No, even a souse, the original souse right? is European, and we just adopted and changed it and twisted it a little bit.
Stop eating grits.
Yeah.
You don't like African, you know, is it these African Americans, the bigoty, and they don't. And stop eating grits then.
Yeah. But let's
make a point. Protest that.
Yes. Well, let's start our show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I want to talk about what's happening on Bay. Let's start with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a letter circulating. Ministry of Tourism issued a letter. And I think it's inside a newspaper also about vendors who have been squatting. I can use that word. No, squat is not a good word. On the wharf. And when I say squatting on the wharf, you know, you have vendors who are in the port, the cruise ship port. There are vendors who are in the straw market. And there are vendors who are outside. They are on that wharf by the Senor Frog restaurant there. And then alongside, they're not paying anything. They just, I can tell you where they came from.
Do they have temporary vendor permits that require that a vendor must remove any trace of their presence at the end of day, but they could come back the next day? Are they operating like that?
I do not know. Right, let me tell you who they are first. Let's identify.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember when we first closed the cruise port, right? And we moved everyone to the Rawson Square.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to make a makeshift area to make sure these people continued their port was being constructed.
You mean to make sure the tourists had something to do while the cruise port was being constructed?
That too.
Okay.
And then I guess it's a narrative. What subject? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So those people, and then some other people joined them who said, man, it's an opportunity. Let me go and set up since.
Because I have a temporary vendor's permit.
Yes.
And technically there's been no announcement that I can't do it.
Yes. So they set up there. Then the cruise port opened up.
Mm-hmm.
80% of those people went into the cruise port.
80%?
80%. And some people said, man, they ain't paying that, or they ain't want to be a part of that. And then some went into the straw market, who had space there.
Right? They had space in the straw market?
They still have space in the straw market, but then we have to remember that we have different straw markets too. We have straw market on Cable Beach, we have straw market on PI, then we have straw market on top of the forts. there's four different straw markets. They all went to different areas.
Okay.
Then there were people say, man, I won't go to those places. There's a strip right there, the park, right across from that Cuban tourism place, right, where they sell tourism Cuban culture in Ramillo Bay Street. Right across from there, they set up shop. And now Ministry of Tourism says, no, they got to move. We have a theme for Bay Street, right? This is for persons who pay to be in a particular place, and you are not regulated. So they're trying to regulate everybody and decide to move. And this coupled with the people who are on Junkanoo Beach, who are also told, okay, this makeshift thing you're all doing here, public park.
Is that what they were told? Well, when I read the article, the prior article, we read it into the record before, it didn't read like they felt that that's what they were being told.
And explain that.
Austin Coley.
Yeah, Byron Austin Coley.
Byron Austin Coley. In his statements, it suggested that they were asking the government to consider a proposal that only moved them temporarily from Canoe Beach, and that as soon as whatever structure is formally erected there, they be given first preference to come back into that new structure, into that new space.
Mm.
And I'm not quite sure if that's the same thing that the ministry is thinking about.
Well, one lobbying for that. The idea they got to move. And now there's a subsequent counter offer. So man, we have no problem moving, but we want to come back. But that's something different. But I want to talk about this before we move.
Yeah, Prince George Wharf and what's happening on Bay, because something else happening on Bay.
Public parks, beaches and parks.
Yeah, I got the letter here.
Beaches and parks. I am concerned because on a number of beaches throughout New Providence, I'm talking about New Providence, are now having vendors create permanent structures, shantytown structures on all the beach. I'm not sure if you're going to Montague. There's supposed to be no permanent structure at Montague.
There's supposed to be no permanent structures.
And they're popping
Montague
up like crazy. They all have some kind of permit from beaches and park. But I know it got to be illegal to be a permanent structure on the beach and in my parking space. I can't even park the car anymore because people are creating makeshift buildings in the middle of the parking space on each beach. I mean, spreading. I mean, every beach you go on, you see it spreading. Even on where is not Junkanoo Beach, where Awaki. If you go on Awaki now, you see that Awaki is slowly extending.
Right. Some of the venues have extended their seating area onto the beach.
Illegally. Because the beach is for swimming. They don't allow behemoths to swim anymore. They are on the sand, and then they cordon off the beach to make sure nobody get access to the beach illegally. And I've been watching and say, surely officials have been watching these people encroach on the public's beach, extending their restaurants, adding new restaurants. Awaki stops right where that road is, and anything to the right of it is illegal. And they keep on, now that's maybe, hopefully I'm not exaggerating, a quarter mile long of extended vendors.
See, I thought we was talking about Bay today. I didn't know we was talking about lawlessness and the consequences of it. Because it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that people haven't seen the need to organize. Mm-hmm. And I mean properly organize. I don't mean just form an association, but organize yourself, right? I hate to think that the state has allowed people to sort of evolve and unfold their business beyond the boundary of the law,
mm-hmm.
knowing that they're going to come in and just shut the whole thing down at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think it's unfair to people, and I think it's unfair to say, well, y'all breaking the law anyway. Y'all should have known something was going to come. You should have just been prepared for it.
Yeah.
I think that's not the way that we do business in this town. And then I think it's particularly troubling, right? If at the end of the day, the state is still collecting taxes from people who are operating outside of the scope of the law or the policies provided for that space. It creates a not just a dangerous precedent, but it creates an environment of distrust and frustration and protest.
Yes.
Because the average Bahamian, and it's not just in this realm, we could talk on the road as well, the average Bahamian is saying, the police see me doing it and they ain't stop me, so it can't be illegal.
Yes.
It must be okay, right? And I think it's going to be very unfortunate. Further to that, I think it's unfortunate that you expect people to operate in a manner where, well, you know the big guy is going to be prioritized over the small guy. You know that's what's going to happen. Why should you expect anything different? Well, because I should expect something different, A, because I am a Bahamian and therefore an direct investor, and B, because you actually witness me making an effort to legitimize my operation, right? Making an effort to entrench or sustain an economic mechanism.
Yeah, that's a debate I see Ministry of Tourism and parks and beaches to be having in the future.
And not in the future. It's a debate that should be taking place right now as the Tourism Development Corporation bill sits in the House of Assembly. It's a debate that should have taken place before the creation of the Bahamas Association of Shore Excursions. It should have been a discussion accompanying these processes, not a discussion that takes place after these processes have been entrenched.
Let's read that in the record and then pivot.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
Just so people listening, audience who did not get a chance to see it, is aware of what's happening, so they can use that for future talk shows later on, Howard perhaps, and Noddy later on. Go
absolutely.
Ahead.
This letter was written by the Downtown Revitalization Unit. It says, "Dear Vendor, rechanges on Prince George Wharf. Today we write to you with a blend of sentiments as we communicate significant developments and upgrades along Prince George Wharf." A blend of sentiments? Like coffee. "Regrettably, ongoing upgrades and development take changes within our operating landscape." This is a little faded at the end there. "Consequently, there will be no renewals of current licenses or issuance of new licenses in the foreseeable future. Additionally, the Straw Market Authority will be orchestrating new requirements or new something arrangements." Like I say, it's faded at the end there. "In light of these developments, we must inform you that you must vacate your current premises on Prince George Wharf by the 15th of March, 2024. We acknowledge that this news may be met with surprise and disappointment, especially considering it's less than a month away."
It's a month.
From 15th of February to...
It was issued on the 15th of February. Yeah, 15th to 15th, it's a month. You have a month to move.
It's not enough time.
But that's a different debate. Go ahead, finish it.
"We acknowledge that this news, surprise and disappointment. Please rest assured that this decision was reached after careful deliberation with due consideration for the potential impact on your business and operations. Despite the challenges ahead, we firmly believe that this course of action is essential for the overall well-being of our stakeholders and the continued progress of our endeavors. We extend our sincere gratitude for the invaluable contributions each of you has made in transforming Prince George Wharf into a dynamic and flourishing area. Your unwavering dedication has left an indelible mark on the area, and for that we are profoundly appreciative. Although we understand that this transition may pose uncertainties, we are fully committed to supporting you throughout this process, collaborating closely with the Straw Market Authority. We are actively exploring alternative options and locations that may accommodate your business effectively. Our team stands ready to assist you in any way possible to facilitate a seamless transition. Should you have any immediate concerns or queries, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. Your satisfaction and peace of mind are paramount, comma. I just want to make sure I was reading that properly. And we are here to provide the necessary guidance and assistance. While we recognize that this news may bring challenges, we are confident that by working together, we can navigate this transition and emerge stronger. Our dedication to fostering a prosperous future for all stakeholders remains unwavering. We extend our gratitude for your understanding, cooperation, and continued support throughout this process. Again, the Downtown Revitalization Unit.
Cool. This one put on the racket. So let's pivot, right?
Let's pivot. What do you mean, let's pivot?
We have limited time. I have four things.
There's so many things to be concerned about in that letter.
Okay, what concerns you? That was a done deal. They give you the letter and they tell you we'll assess you tomorrow.
Your assessment of it is what concerns me, because it appears that your assessment is correct, that that's how they're thinking. It's a done deal.
It's a done deal.
First of all, that's stop. First of all, that's Prince George Wharf.
Yes. Private property. You can't make a makeshift place on the wharf.
Who does the property belong to, Mr. Newry?
It belongs to the Bahamian people.
Is it private property?
It is private property. You can't make a makeshift building on the Hingham.
So it's fine. You can't make a makeshift thing on the building. Yeah. Why isn't it that a space has been...
There has been a space.
Demarcated for Bahamians,
yes,
with no affiliation to a union or them to be able to ply their wares downtown. Don't want to be a part of the straw market union. I don't want to be involved in those politics. In fact, as a vendor, I don't want to be involved in any organization or association
is
not properly managed.
No, you believe in chaos.
That is taken advantage of or unnecessarily involves itself in a politics that it can't control. As a Bahamian vendor, there should be a space for me despite my affiliations.
There's no space on the wharf.
There's no space in their minds even.
They can go to any of the straw markets. Any of the straw markets and get a seat. Pay. They need to pay. They don't want to pay.
I don't want to be in the straw market.
You just don't want to pay.
No. The straw market is... No, it's not a problem of paying. The fee is nominal. It's the politics involved.
There's no politics. We don't want no shanty town on Bay Street. You're one of those people who stop on Carpen Road, eh?
I think you'd be...
You're one of those people who stop on Carpen Road and buy vegetables. I bet you.
Absolutely. You know why? Because the Gladstone Road Farmers Market is not properly regulated, and I am being forced to or encouraged to go to... In fact, let me put it to you like this, Mr.
It should be illegal to stop on Carpen Road to buy farm
There should be systems in place, right, to regulate businesses and services and the actions of businesses and ordinary people. At this point in 2024, the government has left us vulnerable to wanton terrorization, right? There's no regulation in the market. You go to a farmer's market and there's no guarantee that you buy in local. You have to have a relationship with the farmer. Build trust. There are farmers at the market that I trust. I know their stuff is local, and there are people I don't. We're being terrorized in businesses. We're being terrorized on the open road. We're being terrorized by people who refuse to follow any regulation or organize themselves. And the average Bahamian is left. If you don't want to join a gang, then you on your own.
Anyway, I hear you. I disagree with you, but I hear you. I don't believe in no shanty town on Bay. They build in shanty towns. But I won't talk about...
As I'm saying, if the shanty town is fine until it's... The shanty town is fine while it's to the benefit of the government. While they could collect taxes on it. You fill this space until we're ready to do something.
Now we're ready to do something. That's my point. We're ready to do something that I need. The narrative. The narrative of BPL and its bill. There's $150 million that BPL lost over a time period during COVID. $150 million. A narrative was already established. A narrative was already concluded. The narrative that was... Every Bahamian knows it because we had great debate over it. The narrative was that the current government did not take advantage of the hedge that they had. Right? That was a narrative. The minister then... Who's the minister then? Alfred Sayers? Alfred Sayers was the minister then?
Mm-hmm.
I think even the prime minister made commentary on it. Everyone in the Bahamas accepted it. Okay. We didn't take advantage of it. We'll vex. Hopefully the government don't do it anymore. We knew that. We accepted that. That was conclusion. There's no arguments there. Right?
That's you.
That's me.
Who accepted that?
No one else accepted that?
Not me.
But now we have a new narrative. So since you didn't accept that one, I perhaps you will accept this one. The new narrative from the new minister, right? I'm not sure where she got this new narrative from. But I want to read to see if anyone else was paying attention, because apparently there was no hedge. No one did not take advantage of it or whatever it is. None of that existed. None of that existed.
That's not quite what I got from the articles.
It's either they didn't take advantage of it.
It's jokey.
Yeah.
It's all a joke, but that's not quite what I got from the articles. I think it's a bit more complex than that.
Read the article and let's conclude to that then.
All right, so the two articles, I think, are great reading points. The first is Pintard Points to Conflicts in Governments, Explanations on BPL Arrears, and that's in The Guardian on the 16th of February. And then the second is Officials in Contradiction on BPL. That's the 19th of February, 2024. We'll read from the second article, Officials in Contradiction on BPL. And example power and light, including pronouncements made by government and BPL officials over the last 2 years, as well as reporting by the Ministry of Finance, portrays a story of contradiction and raises questions over what is true and what is absolutely not. The most recent explanation for BPL's $150 million in arrears, as provided by the current minister responsible for the utility, JoBeth Colby-Davis, in the House of Assembly last Wednesday, is in direct conflict with previous details provided. Colby-Davis, responding to a question asked by opposition leader Michael Pintard, claimed that government granted BPL a $110 million loan to to address the under-recovery of fuel costs incurred by the COVID-19 pandemic. The specifics of this loan, including the terms and interest rates, are in the process of being finalized, she stated. She continued, quote, during the pandemic, to alleviate financial strain on our customers, BPL charged a reduced rate for fuel costs, absorbing the difference in deferring essential capital projects. Quote, subsequently, through a glide path fuel recovery strategy, we have been able to recover a significant portion of the under-recovered amount, allowing us to resume and fund critical infrastructure projects. Close quotes. In blaming the pandemic, Colby-Davis introduced a new explanation for BPL's woes, and also called into question the recovered funds for the purpose approved by its regulator to cover the buildup of fuel cost arrears owed to its suppliers. Former Minister of Works Alfred Sayers, Prime Minister Philip Davis, and BPL CEO Siobhan Cambridge all previously pointed to the Russia-Ukraine war for driving up oil prices globally and thereby having a direct negative impact on the utility provider. Sayers, in fact, pointed out that during the pandemic in 2020, oil prices had been, quote, considerably low, close quotes, and BPL during COVID had enjoyed a, quote, prolonged period of low fuel costs, close quotes. Speaking in October 2022, Sayers explained that because the government chose not to increase the fuel charge as the price of oil increased globally after the start of Russia's war in Ukraine, BPL's fuel hedge, which Cambridge said did not provide the savings that were intended, turned into a financial burden for the power company, with the fuel charge kept at 10.5 cents per kilowatt hour. Quote, the government cannot continue to subsidize the fuel charge and the fuel hedging policy adopted in 2020, when supply outpaced demand and prices were considerably low, is no longer realizing the same benefit as before. Close quote, said. He added, quote, at the time, 2020, the fuel hedge worked in the first year of the Davis administration. Worked in our favor. The global slowdown meant that supply was higher than demand, driving down prices. During this time, we enjoyed a prolonged period of low fuel costs to benefit from hedging. Sayers noted that in the first year of the Davis administration, fuel prices increased globally, quote, at an astounding rate due to the global economic and political shocks. In fact, the fuel used to generate energy now costs about 100% more than it did a year ago, he said in October 2022. He continued, BPL is on the precipice of financial fallout if we do not act immediately to align the fuel charge with current global fuel prices, ensure reliable sources of clean, affordable, and sustainable energy, and move to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels as promised in our blueprint for change, he said. The article goes on. You want me to
No, that's interesting, because I know we have a long article. I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, it's a bit long.
And we have a caller who's been waiting patiently. Yeah. So let me engage this caller, and then we'll continue again. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Hi, Aaron.
Good morning.
Here's my very interesting question I would like to put forward. You know, we keep on seeing the fluctuation of these oil in the market. The first thing listening to both of you regarding this column that's out there, the thing that came to my mind is this very interesting question. Does BPL have fuel storage tanks on their facility? And if they do, what is the capacity of they being able to hold fuel in those tanks in order to serve the island of New Providence in particular? The reason why I'm asking this is that because every time there is a global fuel increase, it seems as if BPL reacts to that. Okay? Now, they're saying that my mindset is saying that if there is fuel in those holding tanks prior to the fuel increase, then why should there be an automatic increase almost overnight on fuel charges, in particular to the fuel surcharge, onto the customer? You see, when we look at these things, we have it has to be some clear, definitive information that makes the Bahamian consumer, puts them at a comfort level. Right now, as it stands, it seems as if every time there's a fuel increase globally, the price per barrel, the prices go up. So what happens to the fuel that's already in those storage tanks that the Bahamian people have already paid for? Why is it that the increase has to automatically almost happen where the fuel that's in there we're not benefiting from, but the new prices that come on board, we have to pay those costs? So my question then in closing is, does BPL have fuel storage tanks available? And secondly, if they do, what is the storage capacity in gallons or whatever it is that they use that those tanks hold, so we could determine whether the rationale between increasing prices on the consumer in comparison to what the prices that should not be increased because the fuel that's already in those tanks have not been exhausted yet, why should we absorb the new fuel costs? Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Great questions, Mr. Newry. It's very early, 24. But I think it's time to call for the resignation of the minister responsible for energy. Yeah, man.
Okay. I hear you, but why would you say that?
Has anything changed significantly since Mr. Alfred says has been replaced by Ms. JoBeth Colby-Davis?
Give her a chance to catch herself.
Give her a chance to catch herself what? That's what she said at the beginning of her term. She said, I just need a little time. Remember when she was talking to the union president? I just need a little time to familiarize myself with the ministry.
This is how she's able to give the new narrative. She familiarized herself, and now she's moving forward.
Remember yesterday you asked Mr. Cleveland Aeneas III about prophets?
Yeah.
You don't see, that's what the Bible says, you don't see a prophet in your midst. I told you this was going to happen with BPL.
Yeah.
I told you we weren't at the end. I told you wait for something to arise again.
Yeah, not a shooter drop.
Listen, Mr. Newry, I mean, I don't think this is a glide-by story, right? I think it's extremely important that we talk about that. One of the things that Mr. Pintard asks in the article, Pintard points to conflicts in government explanation on BPL arrears, is he asks ERCOT to speak to how BPL used, or for ERCOT to ask BPL, so how did you use the money attained or generated by BPL's glide path strategy? That's the fuel charge or fuel surcharge increase policy. Right? The state, BPL, and the Ministry of of Energy and Transport still have to tell us how much extra money, right? How much revenue was generated by the fuel charge increase policy, and what was it used for? And why it didn't cover what you said it was going to cover, and why do you now need $110 million? We haven't had an answer to the status of the building. The generators were in. This is music
anyway, time. That's the music now. It looks like we're going on break. I see we have a caller here. We'll have that caller on the next side. But we'll call up. We'll do... Cover, can we take this caller and then go on break? No? Go to break first, then take a caller? Okay, caller, I see you calling. Are we going to take this quick break and then we'll come back and we'll answer your call?
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing these knives to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bark down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim...
Everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
March 8th, 2024 is International Women's Day. Guardian Media wants all Bahamians to truly inspire inclusion. It's not just something we should say or something we should write about. It's something we need to think about, know, and embrace. It's what we should believe in unconditionally. This International Women's Day, Guardian Media wants you and your company to inspire inclusion. Celebrate the women in your organization this International Women's Day by placing them in an ad in our International Women's Day supplement. For more information, call 302-2300 or contact your account executive. The aim of the International Women's Day 2024 campaign is to collectively forge a more inclusive world for women. International Women's Day, March 8th, 2024. Inspire inclusion.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. I'm pivoting again.
No, man, let me read the quote. Let me read the quote into the record. The quote from the article, Pintard Points.
Read the quote, then. Go ahead.
Mr. Nuri, I had it right here, man. It's
That's
a quote
God.
From, pardon?
You That's said, God.
Don't. They call that blasphemy, sir.
Yeah?
They call that blasphemy.
Yeah, even though that he put blinders on your eyes still?
That's because you wouldn't let me print the thing today.
Yeah, because I won't pivot.
Pivot then. You pivot. Don't mind me.
Yeah.
Don't mind
I
me.
Don't
mind Alstom.
The blind eyes.
Don't mind Alstom 3.0. Yeah. Don't mind the biggest story in the country.
These things happen. Let's go to the caller.
I mean, they do happen all the time.
Look for a while to go to the caller. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning, CA.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm Aaron.
Good morning, CA.
Now, talking about Alstom, I read Bannister testimony. No, not talking about the case. About his other minister, spent $90 million and he didn't sign off on it.
Let's not talk about the case. Let's do that. Let's not talk about the case. We have to be very, very, very careful how we talk about matters before the court so that we don't prejudice the course of justice. That's it. That's all. This one in the courts right now.
Recently, a police officer was arrested.
I see you ain't gonna let me read this quote.
But are you still finding it?
I find it.
Read it.
You didn't think I was going to find it, eh?
Go ahead.
All right. So this is from the article, Officials in Contradiction.
This ain't long, right?
No, it's not very long at all, sir. Pintard pointed out that the regulator, the Utilities Regulation and Competition Authority, strategy, quote, we now ask IRCA to confirm whether or not they have been monitoring whether or not the government has applied the funds earned from the glide path to paying the fuel charge to Shell. and if they have not been doing so, has IRCA made it clear that this dereliction of duty is a violation of the law, he said.
End quote.
End quote.
Now we just wait on IRCA. I don't like talking about IRCA on the radio. I feel like they could be watching me.
Where else are you supposed to talk about IRCA?
Ooh, no, man. They let us stay on live.
That's not how it works.
Leave them alone.
That's not how it works.
I believe IRCA's doing a good job. Don't mind Erin. She by herself. I could take up that extra hour.
That's amazing because I didn't question.
I leave IRCA alone.
Whether IRCA was doing a good job.
Just making sure you're not doing that.
I just said that IRCA should have no problem with people having critical interrogations even IRCA on the public airwaves that they regulate.
But anyway, the police officer who had the gun.
So we start with today's article and then we track back to yesterday's article.
Yes.
Today's article, police killings ruled homicide. The mother of one of two men killed on Tonique Williams' Darling Highway on December the 2nd, 2017, said, quote, justice was served, close quote, after coroner's court jury returned a homicide by manslaughter finding at the end of an inquest yesterday.
I was surprised it was not murder, but go ahead.
This is the fourth finding of homicide by manslaughter against the police in the last year and raises fresh questions about how the police and the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions will respond. Coroner's Court inquests do not determine criminal liability. Adverse findings against the police could spark criminal prosecutions. Acting Director of Public Prosecutions Cordell Frazier has not yet said whether she will charge officers in the previous cases that attracted a homicide by manslaughter finding, but has said she is reviewing the cases. Richard Buddy Bastian and Harold Kevin Brown were killed on Tonique Williams Darling Highway around 1 a.m. on December 2nd, 2017. Bastian was pronounced dead at the scene. Brown later died in hospital. We'll go to the article in yesterday's paper.
There is a quiet but loud concern by Bahamians in general about our police force. I'm not critiquing them. I'm just saying that there is a murmur about whether there is some strange things going on within the force. I'm sure the Commissioner of Police have heard the murmurs, and I'm sure that he's addressing it, right? But they, from the simple issue about the strange killings of the men on that red traffic light, the whatever it was, to the shooting at the nightclub of
Azario Major,
to this recent killing of the two men. And like the article says, there's four different cases where the police have been accused of wrongdoing. What they call manslaughter.
Well, they've been accused of wrongdoing, and this is a determination by the court.
By the court.
Or the coroner's process.
Yes, and the coroner's. Repeat what the coroner's has determined. I just want to make sure that people understand that the coroner's, when they did their due diligence and revised the case, they said that the police are found wanting. Is that a good word? Yes, safe?
No. Well, they have been found. Well, the finding is that this action was homicide by manslaughter.
That's worse than finding wanting, I think.
So let me read directly from the newspaper. Yes. A coroner's court jury returned a homicide by manslaughter finding at the end of an inquest yesterday.
That's what it said. Okay, get that article. Let's go to the caller and then get ready to read that. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Newry and Ms. Green.
Morning.
A duty of care. And so you're afraid to talk, speak, walk. What's the point of existing? So, you know, what I was saying is yesterday in the Tribune, there was an article, I had mentioned it, I don't know if you, it says that the word headshot was found engraved on a pistol used by the police. So this is the psyche. Now, I don't want to comment, you know, I know the guy, one of the guys, Father Ray Wells. I don't want anyone to comment on that. But what I'm saying is, the police have a duty of care. They have a secret intelligence branch, okay? So, but I'll hang up because I'm vexed, you know, with the coroner's arc. Could you explain it to me? Because I'm seeing loopholes whereby, if the police involved in a shooting, the coroner, I think the coroner's act states that the coroner should be there first, not the police. We saw it with the Zara Major and a whole lot of other loopholes within the system. So I don't get it. You know, we are between a rock and a hard place as citizens. Who's looking out for our safety and encounters in police officers? It's a gospel according to the police forever now. This is a pathetic nation. bunch of hypocrites.
I hate it. And this is where I think the police need to do their rounds in terms of explaining the process to Bohemians. So we just feel comfortable.
The police and the AG's office, and the AG's right? Office, the police yeah. and the AG's office. And perhaps we take examples from the American judicial system as exposed through media, right? When often we see a scene where a dead body is found and then you hear police say, no, don't touch it. The coroner's not here yet. Don't touch it. And they do a sort of cursory observation of the body, but they're not allowed to touch it. That is for the purpose of not tampering with or interfering with any evidence on the scene, right? Number 52, pardon me, number 52's by police was engraved with, quote, headshots, close quotes. This is in the Nassau Tribune, 20th of February. That's yesterday. The word, quote, headshot, close quotes, was engraved on a police gun used in the fatal shooting of two men on Tony Williams' Darling Highway in 2017. This was revealed as the coroner's court inquest into the matter continued yesterday. Richard Buddy Bastian and Harold Kevin Brown were killed on Tony Williams' Darling Highway around 1 a.m. on December 2nd, 2017. We get further into the article. Bastian was pronounced dead on the scene. Brown later died in hospital. Inspector Henrington Curry of the firearms section of the police forensic lab testified yesterday during cross-examination. David Cash, the attorney for the estates, questioned Inspector Curry as to why the word headshot was engraved on one of the police pistols, which Mr. Cash called peculiar. Inspector Curry said the manufacturer did not put the word there and it was unusual for it to be on police firearms.
So this one is private firearm?
Well.
And do they own this particular gun or do they sign it in and sign it out?
If I were a lawyer, I would say that all of these questions have to be answered before we could make a determination, right? Is this, when you say, the article says Inspector Curry said the manufacturer did not put the words there and it was unusual for it to be on police firearms. It didn't say police issued firearms, right? It said police firearms. So I cannot determine from reading this sentence whether Inspector Curry means a police issued firearm or any firearm in the possession of or belonging to a police officer.
Interesting.
Right? And so that's why we read directly from the article, right? It's been printed in the paper. And again, we read this. The first article we read is the determination of the finding in that coroner's process.
But it gives us confidence that we know that the coroner court is definitely independent. We're seeing that they ruling independently, or I wouldn't say ruling against, but a ruling without any seam of biasness, right? That's something to be happy about.
I think people are just
confident about.
People are, I mean, I'm not happy about it, but we just, I guess, okay, now you're actually having coroner's inquests. For a long time, there were no coroner's inquests. And so people, because I can't use the word happy. I'm not happy because it's something you're supposed to be doing anyway. But people are just, I guess, satisfied that you're actually having these inquests now.
But what's next? We heard that there was four different cases. There hasn't been any charges against anybody. No one has noticed that there hasn't been any charges against it.
Well, we have
found wanting, and using wanting is my word.
We have an article in today's Tribune in reference to the death of Azario Major. The headline is Marshall asks court to reject police appeal. It reads, the Marshal of the Coroner's Court asked the Supreme Court judge yesterday to reject police officers' efforts to appeal last year's homicide by manslaughter finding in the killing of Azario Major. Angelo Whitfield, the marshal, appeared before Justice Franklin Williams on behalf of the Office of the Attorney General. A five-person jury ruled against two officers last year. Azario was killed outside Woody's Bar on Fire Trail Road on December 26, 2021. Mr. Whitfield asked the judge to dismiss the officer's appeal application, arguing that their attorney, Kevon Maynard, gave, and we turn to page three, no evidence that the coroner was not impartial or that the jury was coerced into making the finding they did. So that's the status of that matter. Yeah. Like I say, I just can't use the word glad or happy that the inquests have returned, right? That they continue. We're still upset that they were unable to take place in the first place. Mm. We hope that the resources are made available to ensure that the Royal Bahamas Police Force and the judiciary as a whole can operate the way it is intended to operate.
Yeah. Yesterday, before we go, we have like two more minutes. We had a, what I think they had with Wynn, had a thing, what I saw it right up.
Oh, the EIA meeting?
EIA meeting for the expansion of the Wynn property.
I have it here. Okay. Where I have the notes here. I thought you may have wanted to talk about in the last moment the tragic traffic fatality in Abaco yesterday morning while we were on air.
I need a whole 10 minutes for that. I can't do that in 2 minutes.
I know what you're saying. I just want to make the point, though, that while we are ready to explore the final frontier in tourism space exploration, we haven't managed single lane traffic yet. We still haven't gotten dual carriageway traffic under our belts yet. We still can't compel people to not turn left on red where they're not supposed to, you know?
Yes, I see you
we
still
need to get traffic
up and down for traffic.
I mean, people still dying unnecessarily.
It's time to go, Aaron. It's time to go. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Murray. Of course, Aaron Green was with me, and she's concerned about traffic again. Anyway, have a wonderful day.